Welcome to Empath, conversations and intentions around meaningful marketing for soulful, sensitive, empathic entrepreneurs. Join me, the feral writer, to talk with truth and texture about creativity from the heart space, marketing with meaning and emotion. This is Empath. Hi guys, and welcome back to Empath. I cannot believe we just reached the 50th episode of Empath last week, and so I decided for the 51st episode to basically do a Q&A, to put it out to you guys to ask me anything you like, and I will answer it sort of here in the studio. So I've collated the questions that have come in. I think I've got almost all of them. I think some more came in last minute, but I think I've got most of them. And I haven't prepared anything. I've just lined up the questions in front of me. So I'm going to literally speak and answer as I go through them. So goodness knows what I'm going to say, but we're just going to work it out as we go so that it's as free as possible, as if you were in the room with me, because I want my thought process to be captured here when I'm speaking to you. So without further ado, let's get started. So the first question is, what is the most important thing do you believe in business? For me, the most important thing in business is passion. And I've said that for many years, and I've actually got the memory of telling my old boss, like the last time I was employed, which must have been, let's think, 17 years ago maybe, I told my boss the importance of passion, and I told him very passionately how I felt about passion. And he looked at me and was like, well, passion's not like the be-all and end-all. Like, there's more important things in business. But you know, Aaron, if you're listening, and I love him, he's like another dad to me, you know, I feel like I would still stand by passion and defend it, because, guys, if you're going to start a business, you need to have the passion. It's not enough for it to be just a job. It's so much more than that. And it's your passion that will fuel you. It's your passion that is the petrol in your tank of your entrepreneurship adventure, because without it, you know, you're running on water. You're running on water. Like, starting up a business for commercial purposes, so if you see a gap in the market and you want to create something that will make money, I truly believe that will only take you so far, because you need to show up day in, day out and really give a shit. You know, what makes Empress successful, for example, is that I care. I genuinely care about the people in this community. And, you know, it's mad because I see all these memberships and a lot of them are so faceless and nameless and soulless, and you know, I'm not saying anything bad about people's memberships, but what I'm trying to say is that quite often people sort of say to me, memberships are a great revenue model, you know, well done, you know, creating like a passive income that, you know, it's really clever or whatever. That's not why I started Empress, and anyone in Empress will know and will tell you, like, I know everyone's name in Empress, and I like build up little mental files on them all. I mean, I'm starting to sound a bit a bit baby reindeer, which I haven't watched, by the way, but I've seen all the press about it. I am sounding a bit intense here, but what I mean is, like, I get to know these members. I get to know their names, and I get to know their stories, and I get to know their soul and who they really are. Empress was never going to be something that I just built to, you know, for a quick buck. I'm truly passionate about soul business and heart marketing and connecting on an authentic level with our customers, and I think that shines through in everything that I do. So the most important thing for me in business, above everything, is always going to be passion. The next question is, do you have any advice for someone starting out in copywriting? Gosh, my advice for someone starting out in copywriting would be to build your portfolio and to practice, and to not worry about getting qualification. Don't, like, you know, put that on the back burner, or don't make that a priority, I would say. If you want a qualification, by all means, go for it. But your talent means more to me than anything else after your title. I don't care if you've got a BA ons or a master's, or I don't care if you've got a master's in copywriting. That doesn't make you a good copywriter. I'm sorry, but it doesn't. What makes you a good copywriter is knowing your craft and honing your craft and learning how to write in a variety of voices. We naturally write in one voice, and it's really hard to get rid of that. It takes a lot of practice to get rid of that. And don't get me wrong, over time, that can become a signature style of yours. But practice writing in different voices. Practice finding companies that you love, but also companies that you don't love. And try and practice writing in their tone of voice. You know, see if you can write a blog post or a social media post that would sound like it was McDonald's. And then see if you can write a blog post or a social media post that would sound like the White Company. Practice writing in different styles for different audiences. And practice short form content and long form content. And read. Everyone says to write, but one of the best things you can do as a copywriter is read. Read every single day. Read everything. Read adverts. Like, critique them in your head. Think, what would I do differently? Read social media posts. Think, what would I do there? Think of title ideas. Go to the shop and pick up random things. Pick up a box of toothpaste, you know, a box, a tube of toothpaste in the supermarket next time you're in. Hold it in your hand for 1 minute and then think, how would I sell this? What would I say about this toothpaste? Don't look at what they've written. Look at everything but what they've written. Then look at what they've written. Could you do a better job? How would you do it differently? What would make it your style? The only way to become a good copywriter is to write, to read, to practice, and build your portfolio. Don't go straight in going like, I want X amount of money. If you're doing it for the money, you'll never be a good copywriter. Because it comes back to the passion. You've got to give a shit to be a good copywriter. So I would say, just write. Just write and show up and ask companies if you can write for them. And, you know, sometimes you've got to do work for cheap or for free. And I'm not a big fan of, like, advocating that. But I think if you're just starting out in copywriting, let's say you are a hairdresser who wants to go into copywriting, you can't get into copywriting without having some writing. You might as well approach some companies that you really want so that you've got a really good portfolio that's on point. So I would do that. And if you're definitely interested in being a copywriter, then hold out, because in the next week or two, I've got a very good episode coming up for you on here as well. I've just read the next question. What are your favorite clients or projects in your career? Favorite clients or projects in my career? Oh, and someone's also asked me, what's the favorite project you've worked on this year? Okay, so my favorite clients or projects in my career. Let's think. I loved working on a local photographer in Cornwall. She was one of the first clients to come to me when I rebranded as the Feral Writer. So although I worked for some incredible companies in my agency days, working for Jo from Enchanted Brides was a game-changing moment, because that for me was when I started to be able to say what I really wanted to say. And in the agency, I was making people sound how they should sound, and people were telling me how they wanted to sound, and people were telling me how their tone of voice guidelines were. And I think it got to the point where I just thought, no, screw this. You can't trust the customers to know their own tone of voice, because most of them don't. And you can't trust designers to tell you the tone of voice, which so many love to do, because they will never know it like a copywriter. Big apologies to all the designers listening to this, because God knows I love you. But, you know, I would never tell you what color palette to use. I'm not a designer. I would never tell you what font to use. We know tone of voice. Copywriters know tone of voice. And so for me, I spent so many years of my career being told how to do things and then being hired in to just do the final touches. You would never hire a makeup artist and then bring in another makeup artist just to put the mascara on. So why on earth was I spending so many lives? Now we're talking. I've been a copywriter for the last 10 lives. That would explain a lot. Why am I spending so many years, really, putting the mascara on the clients when I should have been doing everything, the base, everything? And so Jo was one of my first clients where I really got to get out my makeup kit and put together the base. And she let me. She didn't ask me for anything. She didn't direct me. She didn't tell me how it needed to sound. She listened to the risks I wanted to take. She trusted me. She's still trusting me, by the way. I've just signed her up to a dance class. She's now dancing with me. But she was definitely one of my favorite clients, because I remember that moment. And I remember how game-changing it was to be able to get something like that. I also really loved working for a local jewelry brand. Not all my favorite clients are local, by the way. But I did some work for a really nice company called Bloody Mary Metal. And it was just different work, and I really loved the brand, and I think it was a lot about their ethos and how they did things, and the woman that runs it, Lucy, I just loved her edge and how she knew her brand so, like, deeply. And that's quite rare, I think, that people know their brand to that level, so it was really fun to work with someone with such clear vision. And then I also really loved working for The Unbridled, Carla, who is not in Cornwall, may I add. She's in Devon, she's one county away. What I love about jobs like Carla's is that I love a rebrand. I love someone coming to me with their most incredible talent, but a brand that they've outgrown. And so when I met her and I just looked at her and I listened to her and her passion and her raw edge and, oh my gosh, guys, her talent. She's like the most phenomenal photographer. I mean, I work with the best photographers. I truly do. You know, many years later from working with Jo and working with Carla, I still use them as my photographers. You know, I'm really lucky to have such good clients and good friends in my network who also make me look good on screen. Carla came to me in her beauty and edge and her fierceness and her just raw talent. You couldn't see it in her brand. You could see it in her photography. But like I said on the Photographer's Podcast last week, a pretty picture is not enough. You know, you need more than that. And so I really loved being able to help her rename herself and create a tagline that showed her off and then go on to do her website copy and her brochure copy. And I love that. I love it when I do a full like brand like that. You know, I worked with another one who was a cake designer called Urgeli. And again, Nina, when I started working with her, her brand was in a different place. She was in like a lovely, she was such an incredible, she is an incredible cake maker, but I felt like it was quite sort of small and intimate and sort of you imagined her wearing a pinafore in her kitchen. And I wanted to, you know, take it to where her vision was, which was this luxury cosmopolitan style, high fashion couture style cake brand, which is now what Urgeli has become and always was in her heart. It was just about the perception and how we changed that. And I got the opportunity to work on her from a level of looking at the name, looking at the tagline, looking at the, you know, the brochures, the guide, the website copy, the, you know, it's a full project. And that's what I love most. I need to stop now, but I'm also going to just quickly mention Arcana. What I loved about working with Rhea is that from day one, we went on a journey together. You know, we went on a journey together where Rhea sort of was in one part of her life and she wanted to get to another part of her life. And I literally watched her evolve before my eyes. She started on Contented. And then what sort of flourished was she went from one brand to another. We did coaching. We, you know, worked on a name for her and copy for her website and everything. And it just absolutely blossomed before my eyes, just watching her just completely become who she was supposed to be. And what I love is once the client goes on and they fly the nest, it is really sad and you do really miss them. But my clients tend to just keep a foot in. They just tend to keep, like Rhea's a perfect example. She's in Empress and she comes and she goes. She comes and she goes, much like a bird. You know, she's in a different country, but she shows up when she needs it and she doesn't when she doesn't. And that's what Empress is all about. And so I love that my clients sort of like a family. They flee the nest and then they eventually come home, you know, when they want to, you know, settle in the nest for a little bit and then they go again. And that's what I love. You know, I work with the best clients. My favorite project this year is actually working for a local charity, George's Voice, who are a sort of a support group in Cornwall for young women up to the age of 24, girls and young women up to 24, who are struggling with mental health issues and need to, you know, need that support. So to be able to have that camaraderie and meet other like-minded women and to realise that they matter and that there's so much meaning. And, you know, it's Sophie that runs George's Voice is one of the most inspiring women I've ever met. And to be able to work with her at all in any capacity has been a real honour this year. And it's, you know, I've been in this industry a really long time and I can say hand on heart, how much have I really made a difference? There's been the odd project where I've made a difference. But guys, the problem with working in copywriting and marketing is that quite often you're working with people with lots of money who are selling to consumers and being able to work for a charity. I mean, I've worked for 3 or 4 charities, but over the span of my career, that's not a lot. So it's been humbling and incredible and eye-opening to work with George's Voice and to know just the shocking facts about suicide and where we're at right now and what we need to do to raise awareness of that and spread the word and create, you know, a village, which is literally what they're creating. And I'm going to put a shout out here and just say to check out their crowdfunder because they're raising money for a very needed hub in Cornwall so that girls have a drop-in point between sessions because, you know, 1 hour a week is not enough support for a young girl in crisis. So if you've got even £5 to spare, guys, if you love this podcast and you want to support it, it's free content. I will never charge for this podcast, but if you have £5 or £10 to donate to them, their link is in my bio and it would mean the world. What's the next question I've got here? What are you most proud of in your career? I'm most proud of being named a big issue change maker, if I'm honest. You know, I've had a lot of like nominations for awards. I've had a lot of columns. I've written for newspapers and I've, you know, had a column in The Guardian. These are all things I've been proud of in the past. But if I'm truly honest to myself, like when I look at my values and what matters to me, I'm most proud of the fact that I was named a big issue change maker and not for my work. You know, during COVID, I wrote 100 letters to strangers so that we could keep connected and all reach out to each other. And it was the most incredible project I've ever done in my life. And I didn't know I'd be picked up for that by the press. And then obviously the big issue got hold of it. But yeah, I'm really proud of that, that I got to, you know, be included in that issue alongside some of the biggest movers and shakers in the UK. And you know, it's a real honour to just be a normal person in there and have a little certificate that sort of says that I made a difference during that tough time for everybody. So that's probably what I'm most proud of. What does my week look like? My week varies. It's sometimes it's full of client meetings, sometimes it's full of creative time. It's generally got a mix of both. I usually spend 2 days a week on creative time, creative space, creating my content, content for Empress, etc. I have time during that period to work with priestess clients, which involves in-depth coaching, replying to voice notes, looking at their heart work. You know, there's a lot to be done. Priestess is a lot more intensive than Empress. Empress, the work I'm doing is very much sort of quarterly work that will be looked at in the next quarter. It's not one-on-one apart from the heart-to-hearts. Priestess is much more intensive, and those people on Priestess, they get access to me pretty much around the clock. So I have to give time to that most days just to check in, to make sure that I've got anything from them, but also get the balance of leaving them enough space to actually do the work and get on with it and not be bothered by me. The whole point of Priestess is that I'm sort of holding their hand, but I'm expecting them to do the walking. You know, I'm taking one step back like you would with a toddler. So they're always ready I'm there if they need me, but they're learning how to walk it themselves. So, and I love that. And I work with the most incredible clients on Priestess. And then I also spend time on, I have a regular marketing client that I work for, and I try and get as much free space as I can for coastal walks, for time with the dogs, for time with the children, for time going sea swimming, running, dancing, because this is what fills me up and makes me a better creative guy. So I really believe in investing in that. Someone's asked me, do I have a favourite day of the week? I do have a favourite day of the week, funnily enough. It's Thursday, which is the day you'll be listening to this on. And Thursday is my favourite day of the week. I was born on a Thursday. That's not why it's my favourite, but it's, I don't know if people know that the days of the week are ruled by different astrological planets. And so Thursday is Jupiter's day. And Jupiter's all about luck and expansion and positivity. And I can honestly say good stuff usually happens to me on a Thursday. I don't know why. But if I get good news, it's almost always on a Thursday. And it's got to the point now where I walk into a Thursday expecting it to be good. And it kind of is good because I expect it to be good. So it's self-prophesizing, but I'm all for Thursdays. Thursday's child has far to go, I think they say. And I just feel like it's a positive day all round. You know, I think Fridays are overrated. What are the three most important lessons you've learned in business? Be kind. Tell the truth. Be original. That's off the top of my head. But those are three important lessons. Be kind because, you know, support others. It doesn't take you a second to support somebody else. I think if we see everyone else as competition, that kind of causes a problem. I'd rather have, you know, comrades and peers than competitors. And I feel like the more you help others, the more the word gets out and people will help you back. I truly believe that. In fact, and this isn't related to this, but I did an astrology reading for someone the other day who's going through a really tough time, and it was real basic reading. It wasn't like one of my celestial sessions, which are really in-depth. But I just met with her for a coffee. She's local, and I was talking to her, and I gave her a reading, and it really helped her. And at the end, she was sort of like, how much do I owe you? And I said, no, I don't want to charge you. Just have the reading. You know, I don't need that money, you know, and she needed that reading. And then when I went to get my eyebrows done, like a week later or 2 weeks later, the lady that does my eyebrows, it turns out that was her mother, and I never knew. And I went to pay, and she said, no, you didn't charge my mother, so I'm not charging you. And I think that's wonderful. I didn't do it for that reason, but it just shows that that's the energy of the universe. You know, if you give freely and without expectation, you do receive the most amazing gifts and rewards. So I think it's important to be kind, and I think it's important to tell the truth, because sadly in marketing and things, so many people don't tell the truth, but it's one of the most powerful things you can do. If you're always true, then you'll never go wrong, because you'll show your difference. You'll define your difference. You're not trying to be something that you're not. And, you know, everyone will notice at the end of each podcast, I say, all you've got to be is true. But I truly believe if you're truthful in how you market and how you promote yourself and how you share your content. If you're creating content authentically, guys, and not borrowing it and begging and stealing bits from other people's Instagram that you think looks good, if you just tell the truth, it doesn't matter how it sounds. It matters that your story is on point. It matters that it's real. People know when they're being lied to, guys. People know when they're being spun a yarn. So just keep your story clean and honest, and keep your marketing clean and honest. Don't go telling me all these great things your product's going to do if it's not true. I think that's a really important lesson. And my third one's obviously to be original, which is, I think, really powerful, because there's so much copying out there. There's so much cloning, and who wants to sound the same? Who wants cookie cutter copy? Try saying that 10 times quickly. Who wants to be unoriginal? God knows, but I don't. You know? Be true, be you, go out there and be the best version of yourself. And I think that's underrated, because everyone's always looking over their shoulder at what everybody else is doing. Well, they're doing reels, so I better do reels. They're using this hashtag, so I better use this hashtag. What are they doing? What are they doing? What are you doing? Who are you? Who are you? Take a moment to work that out, because I think that's the most important thing of all. Okay, so the next question I've been asked is, what has been the most challenging part of your career yet? And this person has said aligned, not agency. So what they're asking is, what's been the most challenging part of my career since I basically became the feral writer? Let's think about this. The most challenging part. To be honest, the most challenging part has probably been the people I've lost along the way. Yeah, I would say that. It needed to happen. In hindsight, but I've lost a lot of friends, a lot of, you know, peers during the time that I started what is now the Feral Writer, because I guess I did things differently. You know, I was working in an industry that was very sort of cotton candy and cute, cliched and glitzy and pretty and surface level. When you step away from that and you do something different, it upsets people. You know, if you start doing things that don't comply with the norms, the societal norms, if you're not compliant and quiet, then it can cause problems. But I guess the whole part of the Feral Writer was that uprising, that uproar, and that sort of fuck you to society, to traditional marketing. So when that happened, I lost a lot of, well, I would have said friends, but clearly not. I think I lost most people, if I'm honest, in my life. You know, I had an agency at the time. Not one of my team members continued to talk to me. Not one. You know, even though sort of I made sure it was all done properly and there was a notice period and everyone had ample pay and it wasn't enough, I think I was, you know, definitely outcast from the corporate social circles. And I, you know, that's not really improved. I ran away from the local business community to start fresh. And I sort of went after other people like me, like-hearted, wholehearted, authentic entrepreneurs. And that's what I attracted. And now I've got my little sort of, you know, feral pack of creative wild entrepreneurs who march to the beat of their own drum. And they don't want to be boss babes. They don't want to be six-figure, cliche riddled, you know, they don't want that. They want to be real. They want to connect with their customers. The people in Empress, they want to work from a place of core and a place of care and a place of community rather than just fitting in and saying the right thing and the sort of heartless, soulless networking events we all used to go to. But I traded a lot to do that. And although it sounds like I'm talking about my agency days, the better that I did, the more successful I became as the Feral Writer, the harder it became to have people by my side, if I'm honest. It's been a really lonely journey. And it feels really weird saying that, because obviously I've created Empress. And in Empress, I are my people. Those are my people. But would I be lying to say that my business cost me a lot of things, but I guess that it truly didn't, because the right people would have stood by me. But wow, I lost family. I lost friendships. I lost corporate relationships. I lost clients. All because I started being true to who I am. And the better things did and the better I got and the better my life became. You know, what is it that there's that quote from The Devil Wears Prada, isn't it? When he says, you know, the more successful you are in your career, the more your personal life goes up in flames or something. And when your personal life is gone to shit, then you basically know you're a success. That's kind of what happened. But my life got better and better. I spent more time on the beach, more time doing the soul work, more time with my children, you know, more time getting to the roots of who I was and starting to love life in the day to day. You know, I think as a society, we live for the weekend, we live for our annual leave or whatever. And I wanted to carve a life that just felt different to that. But the more I did that, the more I got creative, the more I shared my message, the more I built my community. Yeah, I lost it a lot personally. I lost a lot personally. And that still continues today. It's been a lifetime lesson, but I wouldn't have traded it because I truly believe that all you've got to be is true. And sometimes it's been lonely, but bit by bit, I found my people. There are still people in my life who don't want well for me. There are still people who, you know, really, really struggle to stomach any success that I have. And that's really hard to witness, but it's been worth it. I would honestly say it's been worth it, but that has been by far the most challenging part. Because sometimes, you know, you find you, well, I used to definitely shy away from any sort of success to like make myself smaller so that, which isn't really possible, make myself smaller to make other people accept me more. And it got to the point where one day I thought, oh, you know what? Fuck it. If they like me, they like me. And if they don't, they don't. And the right people can sit with me in all my light and all, you know, all that I am. And that's what's happened. But they are few and far between. But I'm finding them bit by bit. But that's definitely been the most challenging part of creating a business. It's not always about the business. It's not always about the money you make or you don't make or the, you know, things that you create or grow. Like all of that has worked out in my favor and it's been just an easy path to walk. But there's not been a lot of people by my side. The feral writer doesn't have a lot of people by her side, but they're the right people. It's been a process of learning who those people are and seeing who's there for you when things are really good and also who's there for you when things are really bad and who really has your back and that's ongoing. So that's definitely been the biggest challenge. Do you have advice on starting a side hustle? I don't know how I feel about the term side hustle because, well, I don't like, is a side hustle, surely the whole aim of a side hustle is to make it a main hustle, right? Or is it just something that people want to do on the side? Like, so you want to do, because it's like successful side hustle to me is a, like it's the main meal. That's the main thing if it's successful. But if you really want it as a side hustle, as in to do it on the side of a paid job that you love elsewhere, then I would just say, my tips are plan to the time that you have, not the time that you fantasize that you have. So I would give yourself, be really firm with your time and say, I've got 5 hours a week to work on this. And then divide your time up. So you say, I'm going to do an hour on marketing, an hour on social media, an hour on content creation, an hour on outreach, and an hour on, let's say, new product development or whatever. And then stick to that. Whatever you do, ring fence, sacrifice, you know, don't sacrifice, ring fence, don't sacrifice, and take precious care of your downtime and your soul time. Don't ever give that up for any side hustle because you need that space in order to be the best you. And what I find people do is they fill their evenings and weekends with this side hustle. And then it's like, what are you doing it for in the first place? Because all you're doing is becoming a slave to a business that is there to supplement something you've already got. So I would say, don't forget what you're doing it for. Live for the present. Don't live for a future and say, I'm going to do 50 hours a week. And in the future, it'll pay off. And also, be really mindful of how you spend your time. Your time is like currency. If I gave you £20 a week to spend on food, you wouldn't just walk into the supermarket and buy everything. You would be like budgeting, planning, meal planning, really thinking about it. And I urge you to do the same with your time when it comes to a side hustle. And I guess lastly, make sure you've got the passion for it. And don't be afraid to put yourself out there and just go for it and just see what happens. And the good thing about a side hustle is that you don't need the money. I mean, you might need the money, but what I mean is it's not your main bread and butter. So you've got a chance to try it and see how you get on and then play it by ear from there. And I think that's a really awesome thing about a side hustle. But I would definitely start with your objective and say, what am I doing this for? Just get real with yourself. Am I doing this because one day I want this to be my job? And if that's the case, you need to go in thinking this will be my job one day and I need to make it work. Or are you thinking this is a bit of fun? But like, be honest with yourself about your motivations for starting it in the first place, because I think that shapes everything. I'm nearly near the end of the questions. My next question is, who is your favourite brother? Well, interestingly enough, my brother sent me this one. And as Matthew well knows, he is my favourite brother, but Matt, Richard's probably the funniest, so let's give him that. The last question I've got is this one. This is a really interesting one that's... Oh no, there's two more. Sorry, I missed one. Okay, so this one's come through. How can you read my mind when even I can't and predict my future? This is from a member in Empress. And so the truth of this is... Because this is true, I can do this. And I do this with as many members as I can. And there is a way I'm doing it. And one of those ways is that I'm listening to you all the time. More than you know. Not you personally, don't freak out. But my members, I am literally listening to you all the time, watching and listening to your language, listening to what you tell me in sessions. I don't always believe what you guys tell me in session. I think you can only tell me what you know at the time. So for me, I'm working out where you are on your journey, what I think is going to happen that you might not know yet based on what's unfolding before me, the language you're using. I'm looking at what's influencing you because I can generally see that. So I'm looking at what you tell me all the time, and that's how I build a picture of you. So over time, as you join more and more sessions, I get to learn who you are, what you like, what you love, what makes you tick, what makes you bite. Quite often, it's what gets you guys angry that I can really learn a lot from. That's when I know that something's come up against your values. So I'm watching this all the time, and that's how I build a picture of you. So I can sort of almost second guess you in a way and work out what's coming for you. But secondly, I'm in tune with a lot of the markets. You know, I'm looking at the markets that you guys are in and I'm interested in them. So I have a rough handle on what's going on. But also thirdly, I'm really intuitive. I'm a Cancer rising. I've got a lot of stuff in my chart that makes me be able to read people extremely well. So when I'm around people's energy, I can just feel it. I can just bounce off it. And so I've got a really good idea of people based on the energy alone. And that's how I can meet a stranger and just work it out very quickly. I can think on my feet and work with energy really fast, and I use that energy as well as... I'm very rarely working with the facts, which most copywriters do, most marketers do. I'm very rarely taking the facts of what you're telling me. I'm quite often listening to you. That's why when my customers speak, it doesn't matter what they're saying, I'm learning around them, learning from the pauses, learning from the moments that they're thinking, learning from the little things they tell me about their dog. You don't have to be talking about your work for me to learn your personality, your quirks, what sort of makes you emotional, what sets you apart. These are the things I'm looking for. So in a nutshell, that's how I'm doing it. But I know that it's unique to me, and it's definitely a unique thing that is part of Empress. So yeah, it is something that I love to do and pride myself on. I'd love to say I'm Darren Brown, but truthfully, it is just good listening and looking at everything and taking it all in. And then the last question is, what's next for you? What's next for me? And this is such an exciting question, but I can't really answer it right now because the things I'm working on are private. And so I can't say too much. But what I will say is that two things are coming up, maybe more, but two definite things. One is a collaboration I'm doing with someone. In fact, a collaboration I'm doing with two very good old friends. It is wonderful to be working with them and to be getting the band back together, and that is to follow shortly. So that one I can tell you a bit about, that I'm going to be... it's something completely different to what I'm doing now. It's very, very unique and innovative and exciting, and a really good opportunity for me to work with these people who I have great admiration and respect for. They're two of my favorite entrepreneurs I've worked with in my career. And then the second thing I'm going to share that is next for me is actually something I'm hoping to unveil in the next couple of weeks. It's an opportunity to work with me in a way that people have never been able to work with me before, and learn from me with a way to make it like commercial for them, so that they can, I guess, fill my footsteps. Like, that sounds really big-headed, actually. I don't mean it like that. But what I mean is, I get asked for recommendations a lot and in my industry, and I don't have any, and I don't trust anyone, and I don't have capacity or space, and so the baton has to go to someone, right? So there's going to be an opportunity where I can do quality control on that and make sure that the right people are, you know, getting that work, picking up that work, and that I know it's going to a safe space. So that's coming. Keep an eye out for that, because I'm excited to announce that one. And then last of all, guys, what's next for me? Well, you never know. I mean, I've been invited this week to do my first ever burlesque show. I don't know, in all honesty, if I'm brave enough for that. It's definitely something I'm considering. It's definitely something you guys wrote with that I should do, but it's a hell of a soon. And I'm not sure if I'm quite ready for that outing yet. I feel a little bit sick at the thought of it, but never say never. You might see Pixie L'Amour hitting the stage sooner than you think. Look, guys, sorry that this episode has been so long, but thank you ever so much for all your questions. I've loved reading them. I've loved answering them. And I can't believe we made it to 50, now 51 episodes. So I'm going to let you go. Come talk to me on Instagram and let me know what you thought of the episode. You can find me at The Feral Writer. And remember, whatever you do, all you've got to be is true. Thank you for listening to Empath, the podcast for meaningful marketing for soulful creatives. If you want more from me, head to my website, jesscollins.co.uk, and check out my membership community, Empress, where you will find a community of heart-centered creatives, the Empress Practice, my signature 7 chapters of soulful marketing, and weekly live sessions, from soul goal setting to journaling and personal access to me. The doors are currently open. Be sure to message me on Instagram at The Feral Writer to let me know how you found this episode. Take care, and I'll be back next week.